Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Hello and welcome to episode 90 of Slam Fire Radio for January 9th, 2015. Is this our first?
This show? Is our first. Yeah, first.
First show of the new year. When was the show with Sean? That wasn't...
That was the last show of last year.
And this is the first show of this year.
Of this year.
And in 10 more shows, it'll be episode 100 of Slam Fire Radio.
That's right. We're going to do something really epic. It's been planned ever since. Well, we're going to plan it soon. Well, we might plan it. We probably won't do anything special.
Unlike those lazy guys in Reload Radio, we're not going to ask you to do our work for us.
Right.
Wait, no.
Wait, that's probably, yeah, we probably
exactly
will.
What we're going to do.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing it out there. I want to do like a podcaster's, try and get every Canadian who ever podcasted on the show.
That'd be cool.
That would be cool.
It would. Yeah, that'd take a lot of work, but we might be able to do it. That's a goal. I don't know if we're gonna, you know, even go down that, but it's a goal.
You know, if your goal is to get a yacht, you'll never get stuck in a dinghy. You'll be somewhere in between.
Right. Maybe a canoe.
We might not get them all, but maybe we'll get the best ones.
Why are we talking about boats?
What? All right. Owen, what did you do this week?
Not off track this week. We just sunk.
Still on the boat thing. Owen.
Yes.
What did you do? What did you do?
I mostly suffered.
Oh, well, you're ill.
I am ill, sick. Yes.
Did you not get flu shots?
No.
Are you an anti-vaxxer?
Yes.
Oh, man. It will not give you autism. Besides, you already have that.
Don't make me laugh. It hurts.
Okay. But don't fear that.
Oh, yeah. No, I have been sick with the worst cold of my life. Well, it's not cold. It is influenza. And I'm now stuck with some kind of mild lung infection. So, yeah, a lot of hacking and coughing and
so I'm not coming over this weekend to build mechs. I'm just saying that now.
I'm pretty sure I'm past the contagious,
stage. I don't believe you. When you look healthy and sound healthy again, I'll consider visiting.
Yeah, when that green stuff isn't running out of your eyes anymore.
Oh, seriously, we had
No. Guns.
It was oozing snot out of her eyes. She was so full.
We're done with this. We're done. No, guns.
Not Slam Slime Radio.
No, Slam Fire. What did you do with guns? Come on.
Well, a couple things. I conscripted my kids to sort my pistol brass.
Nice. That is a good use of kids.
Yes. So I, bring it all down to the living room and put the bags and ammo boxes and everything. And then I had a bunch of small buckets and they, proceed to dig through it and pull out all the shiny ones and leave the rest for me to do, mostly is what happens. But
I appreciate that. I saw how they were making a nickel brass bucket. That was awesome.
And that was just at the beginning. You should see the pile of nickel brass I have. It's very nice. Ooh. And for not shooting a 40, not even owning a 40, I have a lot of 40 brass for some reason.
Nice.
I think it just gets randomly picked up and then.
Yeah.
So anyway, but Elliot was getting pretty good at picking out the right size and putting them in the right containers. So.
Cool.
So we did that. That took a couple hours. I played around with my Hornady ultrasonic cleaner, which has been sitting on a shelf collecting dust ever since I won it from Canadian Reload Radio, the only thing I've won in my entire life. I don't even remember how I won that, but it was something you guys had going on.
It's probably the best email ever, the one you wrote about taking that drive. Matthew,
that's still, yeah.
Could be. I'm going to dig that out and maybe read that someday again.
Just if I can find it. Yeah.
So I can't find, there's like a special fancy cleaning fluid or something you're supposed to dump in there and use. I can't seem to find it. Of course, they don't sell it around here. I looked
something
on Amazon.
Green, isn't it? Something green?
No, it's like Hornady ultrasonic cleaner.
Oh, if you go on YouTube, there's guys using a commercial product that's available in the automotive section of Canadian Tire, and it's something green.
Yeah, it's like an organic cleaner. So basically, I did a bunch of research and discovered I can make my own solution using citric acid and a little bit of dish detergent. Not dish detergent, like dishwasher soap, because it doesn't foam up as like regular soap does. Mm-hmm. So I played it, and I had a bunch of different cleaners here. I used a bunch of different, tried them with different brass, and just to see which one worked better, and that worked the best. So I think I'm gonna just stick with that. It seemed to work pretty good. But it seems like citric acid is like the primary ingredient in a lot of these cleaners. So, and it was food grade citric acid, so I can lick my brass if I want, I guess.
Nice. There you go.
So I did that, and I also bought a $7.95.
Oh, one of those Marlin things? I think I've heard of those. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, because as people may remember, I sold my 1022 a while back.
Right.
And I've kind of been
And you've missing. Upgraded, basically.
So basically, I decided I should upgrade, and so, I was in Moncton one day, and...
Well, actually, you were in Woodstock first. You were Woodstock first, and you asked them for one. They said, a what now?
Yeah, and they were like, oh, we don't even know what that is. And so I was in Moncton, so I went to a place in Moncton, the same, I won't mention the name of the place, but it was the same company, just different branch, and they had one on the shelf there, and I asked them a price, they only had a stainless one on the shelf, which was more money. And I said, do you have any just the regular blue barrels, plastic stocks? And they were like, oh, we got 20 of them. And I've been talking to the guy, already about different things. So he knew I was from Woodstock, and he said, Woodstock has four. I was like, 2 weeks ago when I was in there, they had never even heard of it. So anyway, long story short, I didn't buy it from them. I went back to Woodstock and bought it.
Well, interesting. I've wanted to have a stainless steel one just because stainless looks cool and, whatever. But they actually have different sights. The stainless ones have a different style sight than the blued ones, and I prefer the sights off the blued model. The blued one is sort of a square notch and a square post. The stainless one is a round ball or a round post and a rounded out notched rear receiver or rear sight, and I do not like the way, it's just personal preference. I prefer just a post, no ball. Yeah. I don't like the ball.
Yeah, me too.
So anyway, my Marlin Papoose, it was stainless, and it came with those other funky sights I didn't like, and I actually took the sights off of Jules' rifle. Don't tell her, because she has a scope. And I installed them on the Papoose, so I have the same sights that I have on my blued 7.95. So,
well played, sir.
Yes.
How much are they going for, Owen, here in New Brunswick?
The taxes and everything. Came to just under $200, so they were $175 or something like that.
Just keep going up.
Yeah, they do. Yep.
Well, 2 years ago, they were $139 at Cabela's.
Everything goes up with time, though, Trevor.
No, some firearms.
Yeah, 22 ammo. Yeah. You're right. 22 ammo has been going down. Oh no, wait.
some things are cheaper than they were before.
Right. Yeah, I don't think guns is going to be one of those things, though. I think prices of guns are always going to keep going up.
Yeah.
Yep. Interesting to note as well, a lot of people may know that the transition period between Marlin and Remington produced some really bad Marlin 795s called Remlins. That has apparently been fixed. I had a good look at Owen's rifle, and it looks top-notch. Looks like they got their tooling all in order, barrels straight, everything is looking really good on those. So anybody been holding out...
Yeah, I mean... Were we going to talk about the little...
Yeah, sure, go for it. You can talk about it.
So that morning, so I went into town in the morning, bought that, and then drove to Matthews, and there was a group of us went on a little hike back in the woods. And so Matthew and I both took our rifles, our Marlins. So I never shot this. I literally took it out of the box, stuck it in my backpack, and away we went.
Which is the proper thing to do when you buy a new gun. Don't go sight it in. That's silly.
Exactly. Well, it was
if it's a self-defense carry weapon.
Right. I mean, as this .22 really is.
Yeah. No, you should always carry a gun you've never fired before.
Yeah. Not my, you know, ideal situation, but whatever. Get out there, and it got to the point where everybody was going to, we were going to do a little target shooting with our frozen feet and hands. But anyway, it was cold. We set a can up on a stick. What was that, Matt? Probably 30 yards?
Yeah, between 20 and 30 yards. Yeah. Let's round it to 25.
Sure.
Why not? And
I don't know, took a few shots, or somebody took a few shots at this can. So I put the mag in, pull up, first shot, hits the can, splits the stick, and blows the can up into the air.
So I guess it sighted in.
It was bang on. Yeah. Yeah, it was impressed. It might be shooting just a hair to the right, but we tried.
Well, mine did too with the Dynapoints, but with my regular ammo, it shoots dead on. So
that's because you guys flinch because you're afraid of 22s.
That's basically not it at all. But thank you for weighing
the Dynapoint. The Dynapoint is a 40 grain over a 36 grain, so that we could be flinching because of the heavier bullet.
The massive recoil.
Yeah.
That's it.
Thank you for being honest, Owen.
The other thing I did when I was in Moncton, I picked up some 308 dies.
And what did you get?
Said 308 dies.
Yeah.
Lee, RCBS, Hornady.
Oh, they were Lee.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Which, did you get the Deluxe kit?
Yep.
Awesome. The best way to go, really.
Yep. Lee Deluxe, and then I picked up some Hornady projectiles, a couple different. I picked up some 150 grain. They only had one box of that. And some 168.
Sorry, I didn't hear you. Did you say Lee? You picked up the Lee ones?
Yeah.
Yes.
Did you get the set with the factory crimper?
He said that too, yep.
Oh, he said he got the deluxe one. He didn't indicate.
Well, the deluxe one comes with the factory crimper.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Yes. And even if I did, I would have asked for the listener's sake.
Right.
that's a cool crimper. That's going to help you a lot, I think.
If those 168 grains, if you just load up a couple and test them and your twist rate doesn't like them and it likes the 150, let me know. I'll buy the 168s off you.
Okay. Yeah. And then I was talking to Random New Brunswick Dave this week as well, and he gave me a couple other 168 projectiles to try that he had really good success with out of his 308. So, different gun. What's that?
I was going to ask you if it was an M305. He put them.
No, different gun, but he said that he's had good success with these. So one of them was a molly coated bullet. So he said try them out for fun and just you know. So
if they work great, and if not, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. So I'll probably use my other ones, get a load pretty close, and then maybe try his bullets and just see if it improves anything. I'm not sure what the twist rate is on my barrel. I've got to figure that out because there was a couple different twist rates for those guns.
Oh, it's easy to figure out. Just shoot a bullet out of it and count how many times it revolves before it hits target, and then do the math for the distance. And yeah, it's super easy.
Yeah,
seems what I've been running into when reading about them is that they like the 150 more, but I think that's factory. Yes. We'll see. You might be able to tailor a sweet 168 grain load, but. They're a Milsert gun, and I think they only ever fired 150 grain ball through them, right?
I thought the ball ammo was like 162 or something.
Oh, I thought it was 150. Maybe that's could be.
I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm not sure, but I know this one likes the 150 because with my little ammo test I did back in the fall, I mean it loved the 150. Hornady factory ammo. So I said, well, I wanted to get 150. They only had one box of it. I wanted to get two boxes. And so I said, well, I'll pick up some 168. The guy told me that a lot of people get that for 308. But again, it's so dependent on the rifle. That
I know my rifle loves 168. That's why I'm saying I want them if you don't use them.
Yep. So,
but I don't want a 10 twist.
Right. I think, I don't know what mine is. I'll have to look. So,
cool.
That's what I did.
What about you, Matthew? What have you been up to?
I did some hunting with Matt. So obviously,
hunting or walking?
We didn't get anything. Actually, driving.
Oh,
yeah. Took even the Pathfinder better. Out for some driving out in the woods before we got a lot of snow. So we did get stuck a little bit, but that was as part of the adventure. But what we did shooting wise is when we did get stuck and unstuck again,
you shot the Jeep.
We thought we
did you get stuck?
No, tempting as it, no, it wasn't even. Anyway, when I got my 22 insert from my 20 gauge, it came with two, and I gave the other one to Matt because I only need one. And he's got a 20 gauge single shot shotgun as well, which made sense as to why I gave it to him. Anyway, we both had them with us on this trip, and so we thought we would get out and shoot them a bit. He hadn't shot his yet, and so we were just, you know, picking, you know, rabbit-sized snowballs at different distances and just shooting at them to try to get, you know, make sure we had our eye in and we knew where to hold and stuff. And the distances just kept getting further and further, and we just continued to hit what we were aiming at. I'm becoming more and more impressed with those little inserts. For what they are, you know, they're definitely not a dedicated 22, but I'm a lot more comfortable with the idea of hunting with one now than I was when I first got it. So anyway, just thought I'd give a little update on that. Other than that, I went into the local gun store and they had a VZ58 in 223 with a side mounted scope mount on it. And so that was very interesting. I know I talked about it last week or a couple weeks ago that it was one of the things that I kind of was on my wish list. But after handling it and after looking at it, what it looks like with the scope mount on, I don't think I'm going to go down that road.
Question, Matthew, is it just the rail on the receiver, or did they actually have the mount on the rail?
They had the rail and the mount.
Now, there's two mounts, two different heights. Was it the high or the low?
Oh, I don't know. This is what turned me off. It was quite high.
Okay, so the low one is, like, just hugging above the dust cover.
Oh, okay, so you cannot use the open sights then with
not with the low one.
Oh, okay, this was definitely the high one then because I could see the open sights, and I did like that. I like the idea or the fact that you could use both the iron sights and the optic without having to take one off. You could just, you know, your optic fails, just move your cheek a little bit lower and use the irons.
Yeah, the issue with that setup is you have to have a stock with a cheek riser.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't get a nice cheek weld looking through your optic.
That's right. And so I just didn't like the idea of that optic being so high. And I just decided, no, I'm probably not going to go down that way. So
yeah. Well, then there's the other option of putting the optic on the handguard if you're going to go with a red dot. You don't need eye relief.
Right.
But
then again, you don't get the option of using your open sight still.
No. Either way, you're losing your backups.
That's right.
Unless you go with the scope mount that you saw and a stock with a cheek riser.
Right. And then, because it's a quick disconnect, you can always just take that off real quick if you had to.
Yeah, even with the low one, that's right. You just take it off.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, and that's an option. That's something that I could consider. So I might maybe be on the fence about it. But at the same time, I'm just, you know, I don't really have a huge need right now for a non-restricted semi-auto 223. Yeah. I want one. I just don't really need one right now. So I'm just going to continue to shop, keep my options open, and see what there is out there.
Yeah, I know, and I'm going to do a comprehensive review of this as soon as I get it out to the range for the show. It'll probably be your range, so you'll get to play with it as well, and then you'll be able to make a better decision.
I'm in. That'll be awesome. Yep. So other than that, I got a new pellet gun, but since Trevor promised me he wasn't going to talk archery, I'm not going to talk about the pellet gun.
I promise no such thing.
Well, in that case, I'm talking about the pellet gun. I got another 22 caliber pellet gun for what I was hoping was going to be small game hunting and pest control, something that I could carry with me when I had my shotgun or something when I'm out hunting. I saw some reviews on it, and the guy shooting it through a chronograph on YouTube was getting over 400 feet per second with this thing. I was happy with that. I ordered mine, shot it through my chronograph, and got just over 300 feet per second with it. So, not happy with it. It turned out, I don't know, he must have been using super light pellets or something. I kept it. It wasn't very expensive, and it's a lot of fun to shoot. It's super accurate for a spring. It's a break barrel 22 pistol. It's huge, but it is fun to shoot. So I am going to keep it and just use it for plinking and stuff with nephews or whatnot in the backyard, but I'll be keeping my Crossman for any actual hunting. So, anyway. Sorry, I veered off of non-actual guns, but, you know, if Trevor's going to talk archery, then I figure it's okay.
That's absolutely okay. Perfect. It's all related.
In one way or another.
Yeah. But we're a general show, remember?
General, that's right.
We don't talk about generals.
No, or majors, but... Definitely sergeants. It's private. It's not private. Public. So, Trevor.
All right.
What did you do?
I got to go back to the Machine Gun Museum over the Christmas break. Had an excellent time. I went back just to get Pierre Luc in there because, I mean, the place is full of Milserps. And as I said before, Pierre Luc is a huge Milserp fan. So this time, Filthy's buddy Fred. You guys know Fred.
I know Fred. Fred's cool.
So Fred was down from Ontario. He's I don't know if he's stationed in Ontario or if he's on course or what, but he's been traveling back and forth, and he happened to be around, so he came with us. Another 4.5-hour visit. We went for lunch, got in there at 1, and we left at 4:30 just in time to go out and eat for supper.
Wow.
It was an awesome, awesome day. And it was so cool to watch Pierre Luc in there. Like, you knew he was excited when he would grab something and go, Trevor, come here, you got to see this. Trevor, do you know what this is? No, I don't, but you're about to tell me. It was awesome. And our host again, I can't remember if I said his name last time or if I am or I'm not, so I'm not, just in
case.
You're
not going to say it just in case you're not allowed.
That's right. You know who you are, and thank you again for a wonderful trip. And I forgot to mention last time, you guys saw the bullet he gave me. I forgot to talk about it last time because, you know, it's only so much time we have.
Oh, we talked about it, though. We didn't talk about it on the show, but Owen and I talked about it.
Yeah. So not only did he give me that 510 whisper, and if for those listeners that don't know what a 510 whisper is, it's a 50 caliber projectile in a cut down shouldered 338 Lapua case. Yeah, they actually have to turn these cases on a lathe to make this bullet. It looks like a 300 blackout on steroids is what it looks like.
Yeah, it looks really cool. I wish I had a bullet like that.
I bet you also wish you had a bullet with a wooden projectile that was for military training, a military World War II German-issued 9mm bullet. What else did he give me? He gave me a Gallen told him about this 28-gauge mortar round thing. It's a 28-gauge shell that goes into a mortar, and when you drop the mortar down into the pipe, that's what engages it.
Nice.
He gave me one of those. Yeah, it was awesome. So he gave me quite a few little gems to add to my ammo collection.
Yeah, I was just going to say, of the three of us to get this, you were the most obvious choice for it, seeing as you do have an ammo collection. So
I was actually
able to add to it.
I think at this point I can start to call it an ammo collection with a straight face.
Yeah, as opposed to I got a bunch of brass.
Yeah, it's coming along quite nicely. So, and then later on, it was a fun-filled day. I mean, start off at Filthy's, and I'll tell you about what he gave me for Christmas here in a second. But we started off at Filthy's, and we drove down Saturday morning, went to Filthy's, went to lunch, went to the Machine Gun Museum, went to supper, and then we drove way, way out past Fredericton, like so far out past. I thought we were like going to leave the province. We were so south.
If you go too far south in New Brunswick, you end up in the ocean. So you really can't leave the province if you're still on land. I'm just saying.
Sure. I'm pretty sure I could see the beach from this guy's house. So anyway, his name is Chris. He's another retired weapons tech, a buddy of Filthy's, who's doing Filthy's M1 Garand work. So we went over there to talk to him because he's helping me with my M1 Garand build, which we'll get to in a second. That's right, M1 Garand build. Yeah, for a lot of time. While I was there, I saw a 50 BMG in his reloading cabinet. I'm like, hey, I got a little ammo collection going. Do you have one of these I can buy? He's like, let's take that one. I'm like, what?
Nice.
So I'm like ready to hug the guy, but I'm afraid I'll get shot. So I'm shaking his hand going, oh, man, thank you very much. That's so kind of you. And he goes, suppose you need a 338 Lapua too? Do I ever? So I left there with a 338 Lapua and a 50 BMG.
Nice.
Awesome. Yeah. So thanks to Filthy, I've started an M1 Garand build and the 7.62x39 AR build. We spent $500 on mags on Monday morning or Tuesday morning. I can't remember which. Between me, him, and Fred, we ordered a bunch of those LAR 7.62 mags.
Yeah.
So needless to say, there is no truck in my future.
Right.
Because all the money I got from the open gun is being turned into the M1 Garand build, the 7.62x39 build. I've ordered a SIG P320 from the Calgary Shooting Center. If you don't shop there, you're a communist. And, so there's going to be no truck. But anyway, yeah. So
no truck soon. There'll still be a truck.
Right. Oh, yes. Eventually. Yes. Let's clarify. Yeah. So, I go to Filthy's, and he's convinced that I was his secret Santa and gave him the sights that Bolivar had for sale.
So you let him continue to think that so that he would give you more free things.
It's working. Nice. Sure, if he wants to think I'm a secret Santa, have at her. Give me stuff. Right on. So he hands me a gift bag, and I look inside, and there's a freaking M1 Garand receiver in it.
It's nice. Like,
Merry Christmas. Yeah. So we got the barrel ordered. The only part on the gun that's going to be factory fresh will be the barrel. Everything else is leftover salvaged from Garands that have been scrapped or whatever, right? So there are no, as far as I could tell from the conversation I had with both Filthy and the gentleman by the name of Chris, who's going to help me assemble it, there is nobody making trigger groups, for example, or operatta. Maybe an operatta. I know you can get some aftermarket. Well, you can still get Springfield parts for M14s that we can put in our M305 clones, but I don't think that applies in the M1 Garand world. So, do I like milsurps? No, but I got to tell you, I'm learning a whole new respect for them. Going back to that museum the second time, I actually spent all my time looking at the milsurp stuff, and I'm finally developing an appreciation for these classic firearms. He gave me a book. Filthy gave me two books, and one really gets into the history of the M1 Garand's development, and I can't put it down. It's awesome. So I'm kind of starting to like milsurps.
That's all right. I mean, there's all kinds of guns out there that you don't haven't experienced or gotten into yet. So
yeah, exactly. I'm just saying, guys, I'm pretty sure this is a sign of the apocalypse.
Yeah.
So just everyone get ready.
Here it comes. General likes milsurps.
There you go. Hell is frozen over. Yeah. What else do I got? I got quite a long list here. I'm going to try and speed it up. I finished my Omni lower. That's a polymer lower for those people that don't know. And first chance I get to take it out the range, I'm gonna try and beat it to death. I might throw it in the snow and then let it get nice and cold, put the upper on and shoot it, see if I can crack it. I just want to see. I paid $49 for it plus tax or whatever. I just want to see if all the hype about how they fail is true and whatnot, if it's going to break. So I don't care if it breaks. I'll write it off, and I just want to see what it's going to take to break it, basically. We might even find out if it's bulletproof. Who knows?
We could always stick it on the 50 Beowulf upper.
If that don't beat it up, nothing will.
Mm-hmm.
So that's finished. I have my VZ-58 here in my hands, and I'm just going to, real brief, because I haven't shot it yet, and I'm not one of those guys that does a gun review without shooting it, but...
It feels good in the hand, and it looks cool, and when I hold it sideways, I look gangsta.
There you go. Review done. Thanks, Matthew. I got it with the Magwell adapter, and I didn't even bother to... I'm not even going to bother to try and shoot it first with the standard mags. The standard mags, the factory 223 30-round mags that are pin to 5 that came with this gun, I cannot articulate exactly how junky they are.
That was my impression of it, too, whenever I looked at the one in the store. It did not look like a high-quality magazine.
Other than to say perhaps they are about on par with a Pez dispenser that would hold 223. I think that's... What do you think? You've seen them?
Yeah, that's pretty close.
It's not the same kind of like plastic we would see in a Prestec Venture mag or in a Magpul mag. No. It's like clear, crappy plastic. Like I'm sure if you
like
drop
Nerf
it on the
quality
ground,
kind of thing.
It's just like water gun plastic.
Yeah.
Like those clear plastic water guns. It really seems that cheap. But anyway, which is really disappointing because my
CZ-85-8. I mean, I've heard that some guys use them and they work great, and I've heard some guys use them and they suck. So they could be.
I hear that about the factory mag, and I hear that about the conversion, the air Magwell adapter. So we'll just have to wait and see.
Yep.
So anyway, the gun, as I said before, the quality of the CSA VZ-58 as compared to the CZ-858 is night and day. The fit and finish is a lot better. There's no tool marks on it. The receiver is either parkerized or anodized or something, where the CZ-858 is kind of like painted and gray. This is all nice and black. It comes with an M4 collapsible stock on it instead of that faux wood furniture. But anyway, I'll get into a more detailed review later
when
on.
You actually shoot it.
Yeah, and yeah. I want to harp on the manual arms and stuff. So,
right.
SummerSlam update. We had to change the date to August 8th and 9th because of the Nationals in Ontario. They could have picked any weekend, I imagine, during the month of August, but they chose the SummerSlam weekend. So now they had no choice. They had to move the Nationals from its usual weekend because the Pan American Games are going on in, I don't know if it's Pan American Games, but something along those lines. in Toronto. So there'd be no hotels, no car rentals. So they absolutely had to change the date. Unfortunately, they chose the date that I had already picked for SummerSlam. SummerSlam's now August 8th and 9th. 16 stages, 14 squads, 9 guys per squad, 126 people, $140, $135 if you pay by EMT. Registration is going to go out probably in a month's time. All the stages are done and sent away for final approval. So that's what's going on there.
Cool.
That's about it for now. There's other stuff there. We're running out of time, so we'll leave it for now.
We can always continue on with it next week.
Yeah.
There's some other stuff there I want to hear you talk about. So, yeah, make sure you don't delete your notes and continue on next week. Yeah.
But if you're a listener of Modern Rifleman Radio, the last episode was pretty awesome. I was on there with Chaz and Paul Carlson from Safety Solutions Academy. Paul Carlson is he's so eloquent and articulate. He used to do remember the training videos that Daniel Shaw was doing for a while?
Yep.
And that's Paul Carlson that was doing those with Daniel Shaw. So just a wealth of knowledge, and he was a lot of fun to do a podcast with. Chaz, of course, is Chaz. How do you not have a good time when Chaz shows up, right? So, yeah, sure. Great. It was kind of a round table thing. It was a lot of fun. So, and finally, going to a 3D tournament for the first time in like 4 years. I'll be shooting an archery tournament on Sunday with Muffin's bow because the bow I bought doesn't fit. So, well. Huh. We'll talk about that on next week's show, how it went.
I look forward to that with the deepest of sincerity.
Excellent.
Or insincerity.
I bet you probably look forward to that as much as I look forward to hearing about airsoft force on force talk and photography and stuff. So, touche.
Touche.
Let's do upcoming events, shall we?
Sure.
All right. Why don't you go ahead and take these ones? I'm all talked out.
Yeah, all right, cool. Well, first thing I want to say is if you're listening to us right now on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network, you need to pause and you need to send us an email right now and let us know that you listen on there. Or if you discovered this show on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network, you need to pause the show right now and email us and let us know that that is where you found us and that you want us to stay on the network. Otherwise, this time next week, we won't be on the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network anymore. So we really need to hear from you if you need us or want us to stay on there. I think that's clear, right?
I think that's very clear.
Cool. Let's move on to what's that?
Even for me.
Even for you. Cool. So the 5th annual charity shoot coming up June 27th. All proceeds are going towards the Dalhousie Nursing Home Foundation. Trevor already talked about SummerSlam coming up August 8th and 9th. The National Firearms Association, the NFA annual general meeting is being held May 23rd and 24th in Quebec City. So if you guys are anywhere near Ontario, Quebec, or New Brunswick, you really don't have an excuse as to why you're not there because it's a pretty short trip for anybody in those provinces. Well, relatively short, of course. And apparently, Jason Philp thinks that we don't shoot enough trap and skeet over here because he sent us about 16 dozen events that are coming up in the Fredericton Trap and Skeet Club. So I think he wants us to get out there and do some trap and skeet shooting. Anybody who is in the Fredericton or, I guess, Fredericton area or New Brunswick area who wants to go and shoot some trap or skeet, go to FT-SC, and that would be Fredericton Trap, and there's a dash in there, skeetclub.com, and you can get all the details on when those events are coming up. They've even got one coming up before the snow goes away. It's a winter blast, so sounds like it could be fun. That's all we've got for upcoming events.
All right, you put the news one in there, so you can take that too.
I did, and the news one is not time-sensitive, so we're going to move it on to next week's show, I believe.
Oh, and it turns out the news is not really news.
It's not really news, but it's a cool story. We did promise we would follow up on this if we got more info. We got more info, so next week, tune in. You'll hear all about the new info.
You will hear the rest of the story.
Cool. All right, let's move into our main topic. And this week, the main topic is an interview with a precision rifle shooter, builder, by the name of Bob Fortier. Bob's been a listener of the show and Canadian podcast all the way back to Canadian Reload Radio and has interacted with us quite a bit over the years, and we certainly appreciate it. And Bob, we appreciate you coming on the show this evening. Welcome to Slamfire Radio.
Well, my pleasure, guys.
Awesome. So, Bob, why don't we start right off with you telling us a little bit about your background in precision shooting and stock building. It's watching your, or seeing the photographs that you post on Facebook of your, yes, I'm going to say this, wooden stocks that prompted me to want to interview you on the show here. So
basically to find out why your heart is full of hate.
Yes, why?
Because Trevor hates wood so much. He just wants to know.
The real goal here, Bob, is to talk you out of building with wood and try and get you onto polymer. So,
yeah, but that might be hard.
So, yeah. So, Bob, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background in shooting.
Okay, well, I'm Bob Fortier from I was born in Sherbrooke, Quebec, but I'm now in Thetford Mines because of work. I've been to furniture school about 20 years ago. So I took I worked for a big furniture company, which was Shermag. They had some shops in New Brunswick, so you might remember that. And when they closed, I moved here to work at a millwork factory. So woodworking was, well, it's my trade. So I've been working on that. And as every woodworker you might know, everyone always ask, hey, can you do me a nightstand? Can you build me
a birdhouse?
Some shelves for something? Can you make me a TV, whatever, you know?
Yep.
So, and it's all right because I have now a one car garage that is my shop. When I moved here, I chose a garage with a house attached.
Not a house in the garage, huh?
I could have a shop.
I like the way you think, sir.
Yeah, that was one of the thing I was looking for.
It's kind of like our basement. We renovated my reloading room this summer.
Yeah, I seen the pictures. Turned out nice. Yeah. So when I got here, I started shooting. One of my friends brought me on a small game hunting one day, and we got some rabbits. And so I took my course, went some deer hunting, got a deer the first year. I was very lucky about that. Then I moved here and started buying guns. And how did I get to make stocks?
Yeah.
As I was saying, everyone wants something from you, and it's maybe a good way to make some money out of it, you know?
Yeah.
So since I was starting shooting, I needed money to buy rifles, guns, ammo, everything. So I said, well, what can I build in a one-car garage that doesn't take a lot of space and that could generate some income? So I thought, well, maybe rifle stocks. Why not? It's small. It's not that big. And you can always put it somewhere else and take the car in if there's anything to repair on it. So that's how I came to do that. So the first one I made was a single shot shotgun I had. It turned out ugly, but I put my hand on it, you know?
Yeah.
I tried it. It was made out of plywood, painted with a cheap camo paint, and, you know, I was happy about the thing there. Then I bought a Lee Enfield at the local hunting store, paid $100. It was a number one. Then I said, well, can I make my own wood out of it? Because it was the sporterized stock.
Yeah.
So I said, well, instead of trying to find a stock and all the hardware, why could I not build it myself? So I found all the hardware for that first Lee Enfield, and I built it from scratch, using only pictures as to measurement. You know?
Okay, so did you go from sporterized stock back to the full wood military configuration?
What's that? Sorry?
Did you go like in reverse? You had a sporterized Enfield and you made it look like a military Enfield again with the full wood?
Yeah, exactly. I did
on
the first Lee Enfield.
Mm-hmm.
Then a couple of months after that, I bought another one, which is a number four. So I decided to do the same thing. It was the sporterized stock again. This one I made out in the beech. It's a pale wood.
Mm-hmm.
So I made my stock in there with that wood, and it turned out great. So that was my second one. So at that time, I had three stocks done. I was getting good, you know. Well, not that good, but I had an idea how to work, you know.
Yeah, still so, learning as you go, but yeah, perfecting it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And after that, I was member of a French-Canadian shooting forum, which is called Extreme Précision. So I decided to advertise, to put a, started a post saying that I would like to build stock and how could I do that and blah, blah, blah. And then a guy sent me a private message. He told me I have two Savage hunting rifle that I need a stock for. I'll be ready to give you the job. So I said, well, go. Perfect. So that was my first job as a stock maker, if I may. So it turned out great. And then I used that. And then I advertised myself as I can do mostly every kind of stock you could want. So it started like that. Do you understand me good? Is my
absolutely. No, absolutely. Fantastic.
Yes, yes, yes. Your English is better than my English. Don't worry about it. It's all good. So, approximately how many years now, Robert, or Bob, sorry, have you been making stocks?
About 6 or 7
okay.
years. And when I, after that, if I may continue my
yes,
story.
Yes. Yes.
After that, that couple of Savage rifle, I had another one. I had a double barrel shotgun, gauge 10, which was broken. So the guy wanted me to redo the stock completely with chickering. So I bought the tools and I worked on it. Turned out great, but it was a long process. But I never learned because I'm doing it right now for another client, but that's another story.
Yeah, I saw those pictures. Checkering a shotgun or any sort of wood stock seems to me like an exercise straight from hell, basically.
Well, there's two things about that. My current job is a shop manager at a millwork factory. I have about 50 employees to take care of. So at the end of the day, I'm quite happy to sit in my garage listening to radio or your show and take out the checkering tools and make some line, you know, clears
right.
my mind.
So yeah, it seems like it could be something that could be therapeutic.
Yes, it is.
Or completely boring.
Well, for you, Matthew, with the whole ADDDDDD thing, yeah. I can't see you.
Checkering, you have to do the tools. If you, I might be able to post some pics on your Facebook page.
Absolutely, yeah, go nuts
to see the tools because it's a very small cutter. You have to make the first line very straight, and then to make the second line, the tool there's one follower, and then there's one teeth that works. You know, so you have a tool that works on the left. So you take out, you scratch the line at the left of the one you made first. And
oh,
then
so it has like a follower on it. Like you make your first line, but then after that, the rest of them, you're just following the line previous.
Yeah.
Oh,
exactly.
So you don't have to measure and straighten every single line.
There's a follower. There's two tools. There's a fine tool that has a single line. There's a follower to the left, follower to the right. There's a double cutter. There's a coarse cutter, which is the same single line cutter, but a little bit coarser. And there's a triple line and anyway, all sorts of cutters. So basically to do a diamond shaped shotgun forehand, you know, just diamond about 5 inch by 3, maybe at the point. First, you have to do the layout, which is a very shallow line of all the, intercrossing line. Is that the right term?
Yep.
Anyway, so first you have to make them very shallow just to mark them. That's the first step. And then you have to redo all of them, but, deeper so that they become points, you know, small pyramids.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the process of checkering. And it is long. I can do about 1 hour at a time because after 1 hour, either you're tired and then you begin to make some mistakes. So you're better off putting the tool aside and working on something else. And
Or the show is over and so you don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah, something like that. You know, I listen, but after 1 hour or so, I just work on something else. And, you know, but 1 hour at a time, it goes well.
Cool.
So I have the same problem. I do about 1 hour of the show, and I kind of tune out and let Matthew finish. So.
Or you do that for a couple of weeks and let him do it alone.
Yeah.
Hey, don't give these guys any ideas.
Yeah. My break apparently is over.
Oh. Yeah. Anyway, so the stock making. I also made stock for the Savage Axis for a while.
Interesting.
When those came out, about it took some time before Boyd's and other stock company start making them. So I needed I wanted a 223 to shoot. So I bought an Axis, and then I said, well, there's a bunch of them out there. No one is making stocks for that, so might as well jump on it. So I developed a way to make them very quick. It took 4 hours to inlet two stocks, which is very quick with a router and bunch of jigs. And what I did, I inletted like four at a time. Then I waited for orders. I had three or four styles that I could do and a bunch of colors. It was all made out of Baltic birch plywood.
Oh, okay. So it'd be like a laminate kind of...
Yeah, it's kind of, maybe you have that if you have some furniture at home that has drawer made out of plywood, it most likely is Baltic birch plywood.
Oh, okay, cool.
There's much more plies in there than on regular plywood.
And so are you telling me that I can turn my wife's nightstand into a stock?
Well, you could. You could. The way I did that, it's those plywood come in a half inch thickness. No. Mm-hmm. The sheets are 5 feet by 5 feet. So at work, we have a big press. So I made them press four sheets at a time. That gave me a 2-inch sandwich, which was glued with the exterior glue. And then I brought that home and I just cut what I need in there. So a big piece like that lasts me a long time.
Nice. That's
cool. So I did about 15 stocks for Savage Axis. Then I had to stop doing them because I had my promotion at work. So I stopped a while, and then Boyd's came in with theirs. So there's no point for me anymore to do that.
Right.
No, because the size of Boyd's, I mean, you financially, you can't compete with their price. They're giving everything away for $100.
No. Well, I was selling my stocks like $200 a piece or something like that.
Yeah.
So because I found a way to make them very quickly. And they work with the magazine and everything there. So
that's cool. Excellent.
It was fun to do for a while.
So, Bob, what came first for you, precision rifle shooting or stock building for precision rifles?
Stock building came first. Mm-hmm. My first time at the Batoche range, which is the range that the PQRA use at the Valcartier base. Mm-hmm. My first time was with the forum, Extreme Precision, I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. They had a day of long-range shooting with the forum. So we were a bunch of guys there. But everyone showed up with, you know, the Remington 700 police and Savages and stuff like that. I showed up with my Lee Enfield with a scope. So it was kind of a fun day.
And you still won.
No, I did not. There was no competition. That day, it was more an
exhibition.
And I had a small cheap hunting scope, 3.9, you know, so I did not see all the markers, and it was a pretty funny day. And the next year, they redid that thing, and I had bought a Vortex 8.24. So, 8.32, sorry. So, at 32 magnification, I was able to see at least the marker. The Enfield was not that bad at that time. So that was my first time really at long range shooting. Started with the Lee Enfield. And then when I bought my Axis in 223, of course I decided to build a stock for it. So I made myself a stock and I became a member of PQRA, which is the Provincial Association of Shooting here. Goes with DCRA. And then not this summer, the one before it was my first season. So I found a used barrel for the Savage barrel that could screw on my Savage Action. It was a barrel from a Savage 12 VLP or something like that. So I was able to shoot 80 grain bullets out of my Savage Axis.
What was the twist rate in that?
It was 1.7, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a 1.7, but the throat was not deep enough to accommodate the 90 grainers. So I shot the 80 grains bullet that time. It was 80 VLD burger bullets. And it was not a great season for me because it was my first season on my my rifle case. It was all mixed up. Only at the last event I bought some Lapua. So I have all the same make. But my first year I had the Winchesters, Remington, and everything in there. So, and I had a lot to learn. The barrel was not that great too. It was okay, but not that great. So I did not win anything, but I learned a lot. And the thing in F class is the first advice is the first year you want to do that, start with what you have and go from there. Because some guys want to buy the whole thing at first, you know, the big rifle, the big scope, the big everything. Mm-hmm. Okay. But you will learn much more if you start with what you already have and improve on there. At least that's my idea on the thing. So.
Well, now, Bob, what kind of rules govern the sport of F-Class? Like, what can I bring for rifle and what can't I bring in? Is there a limitation on optics, on bullets? How is it set up?
Okay, F-Class, what we shoot at PQRA, there's three class. There's target rifle, which is sling and iron sight. That class we will not talk that much about, but it's only 308 and 223. The 308 is limited in weight and bullet weight at 155, and okay. The 223 at 80 grain, if I remember correctly. It's shot with slings and iron sight.
The distance they would be shooting at?
Oh, they shoot at 900 yards. Yeah.
I hope they're shooting big targets.
Yeah, and they're shooting good. It's very humbling to look at through that iron sight.
I bet.
The score that those guys make, holy. Anyway, and the two that are interesting us more is the two class. There's FTR, which is 308 and 223. There is no bullet weight limitation. So there's some guy shooting 308 with 215 grains bullets. You can only shoot from a bipod. And the limit is 8.25 kilograms, including the bipod. That's the FTR.
Are they prone?
Yeah, it's all shot prone.
Okay.
So not off benches, then. You're on the ground.
Yeah,
you're underground all the time. F-class is shot on the ground.
So quick question then, Bob. Why such a heavy 308 projectile? Is it because of distance or wind? Why would you want such a heavy projectile?
Well, F-class is a wind game, basically. Okay. Because if your reloads are pretty good, there is not going to be that much vertical spread, okay?
Okay.
Because if your reload is very good, your ammo is consistent, your speed is consistent, there is no reason why they will not land at the same height. Because if one bullet goes faster than the next, it's going to be higher on the target.
Right.
So, if your ammo is very good, then it becomes a game of wind. Because if you, the V-ball in FTR and F-open, which I will talk later, is half a minute for all distance. It's more or less half a minute. So at 300 yard, the V-ball is an inch and a half. Okay?
Huh. Okay.
That's small.
That is small.
And at 600, it's about 3 inch.
Mm-hmm.
So at PQRA, we shoot 600 yards. So the V-ball at 600 is about 3 inch in diameter.
And the V-ball, that's the bullseye, like the center. That's what you're trying to hit.
Well, there's 5 points. There's a V, which is half minute. It counts for five, but the V is there to, when there's a tie, it's the guy with the more V.
It's like X's on other disciplines. Yeah, exactly. They'll say, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So. Yeah. We shoot 2 sighters and 15 ammo for the score, for a total of 75 each relay. And if I may answer the question Trevor had, the big bullet weight, if you can push it fast enough, gives you an advantage on the wind.
So the heavier the bullet, the more inertia it has, which means it's less resistant to being pushed around.
Exactly.
Yeah. Gotcha.
So, do you more resistant to being pushed around.
It's more resistant. That's right.
Yeah.
Sorry. I wonder, this is a little bit off topic, but I wonder if you can help us with a discussion we've been having the last couple of shows. The bullets
can you
going.
Shoot the 223, no?
Well, there's that one. And also the bullets going through the, going subsonic after, you know, going through the transonic shockwave. Do you know anything about that?
Well,
or do you guys just make sure that your bullet stays supersonic all the way out to the target?
Well, personally, I would not be able to talk that much about it because I'm only shooting at 600 yards.
Okay, so all your
there's
bullets
are staying
super.
There's some guy that shoots at the Connaught Range in Ottawa or things like that. They shoot further, so they might be able to talk more to you, but I must say I cannot go
That's
into
okay.
that subject a lot.
I just figured I'd ask just in case you could.
Yeah, I could not.
That's okay.
The 223 at 600, you can do that.
Yeah.
However, last season, I had a very good setup. I bought a Schillen barrel. I remade a stock for my... I think you saw that one, maybe, Trevor, on Facebook. It's my Curly Maple.
Yes.
Rifle.
Oh, my God. I love maple. I can't believe I said that. Damn it.
You love maple?
No.
If it's polymer maple.
Yeah, Curly not Maple. Nut, oh, it's gorgeous. Anyway, yes, I saw it.
I still have wood if you need something.
Okay.
So, I'm sure shooting a Savage Axis action. I have my Schillen barrel, my maple stock. I'm using a Mystic Precision M-Pod, mostly because of weight issue. Because as I told you in FTR, the weight is including the bipod. So
right.
I wanted a big stock, so I needed to cut somewhere else.
Did you notice that the Schillen barrel made a really big difference?
Over the stock one?
Over the stock one, yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, the stock one, the one I had before, the Varmint one, let's call it like that.
Sure.
I had the most exquisite shooting day at the range when I first tried my Schillen barrel. It was a used one.
Mm-hmm.
I found in CGN. I was starting to shop for that, asking price at shops and everything. And then I saw out of nowhere on the EE on CGN, Schillen Select Match Barrel 223, ready to accept the 90 grainers. So I said, well, go.
Yeah.
I did that. So I installed it myself. And then since I was having a new barrel, new bullet weight, and a new powder, I needed to redo my reload experiment, you know? So I started like most everyone, let's say 23.5 grain in three bullets, a powder in three ammo, and then 23.7 and 23.9, and you know,
yep.
you go like that.
The progression,
you shoot
yep.
three or five, whatever, and then you choose the one that is the smallest group, and you go from there. But I still have my target. I had five reload recipe
mm-hmm.
there, all changing from a couple of decimal of grain like that, and it was almost all of them in a dime.
Wow.
So
wow.
Not that much. So I was scratching my head, laughing.
I don't care what. I just put powder in until it's full, and it'll be fine.
Well, not that much, but I say, well, which one do I choose to go, you know? So I choose one that was not the fastest, but, you know, I chose one and served me well. So that's how I did my... And I saw a big difference.
Yeah, okay.
A quality barrel over a stock barrel.
Right.
So why Schillen over Krieger? Krieger?
Well,
Craig, I'm going to hurt myself. How do you pronounce it?
That's the one I saw on the EE that day. You know, I was shopping for anything.
Are they both the same, in your opinion? Krieger barrels and Schillen barrels?
Well, probably.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, is the Kraken Rum better than the Captain Morgan Black?
Yes.
You know, that's the same.
Unless it's Captain Morgan Spiced Black.
Yeah, sorry. I
hear what you're saying.
Me, so that's why I... But you know, it's all in question of...
Yeah.
Is my Ford better than your Mazda or whatever? So
yes,
they all are good. I think almost any aftermarket barrel you buy will be better than a stock one.
Yes, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You will improve, of course, from there.
But people who want to get into this shouldn't be put off by the fact that advanced shooters are shooting very high end things. They should just go with what they have.
Yeah.
Learn, you know, shoot a couple of matches, learn from the guys who are there, and then start deciding what their build should be.
Well, it's fun you mentioned that, because last season, it was my second season, I had my new stock, I had my barrel, and I bought a Citron S3 scope, 1050, so I made sure I see the targets.
Yep.
And we had four match in the season, and I came in the top three all the time.
Nice.
Nice.
I was surprised myself.
Well, were there more than three people there?
Yeah, that's the thing.
Oh.
there was more than three people in my class. However, the top shooter in FTR were not there. So
Right. Maybe
I could not have done that if they were to come.
Look, I've won IPSC matches the same way. When Mo Hepworth doesn't show up, sometimes I come in first. That's just the way it is.
Exactly.
But as you said, Bob, if you can read the win and you've got good glass, I mean, you definitely went for good glass, you can get a lot done.
So scopes are very important then to make sure you have good clarity.
I'd say the scope and the load development is more important than the rifle. Would I be right with that, Bob?
Scope is very important. I saw a big difference between my Vortex 832 and my Citron 1050. Quality is not the same. The clicks, because when you shoot with winds, you look at the flags, and when the flags move, because the way we shoot at PQRA is, let's say I'm shooting with you, Trevor. Mm-hmm. You're beside me on the line.
Mm-hmm.
You shoot first at the target, then goes down. There's a marker that puts the points in there. Goes up. I tell you, you made a five or something. You said, thank you. Then I shoot my bullet. And then it goes like that. Me, yourself, all the time. So you have to remember, at every bullet you shoot, you have to look at the wind, at the flag, how they are. You have to mark, okay, at that condition of wind, like you choose a flag on the line that you think is the more representative of the wind of that day. And you always look at that flag. And then you shoot the bullet. Let's say you wait for the flag to be almost vertical. And then, boom, you shoot. Horizontal, sorry. Anyway.
Yeah, so how long do you have to make your shot?
45 seconds.
Oh.
So all right, then. What I do is, when I take my two sighters, I check one flag, and when it flips about right, click, I shoot. And for my next shot, I try to wait till it's the same thing,
right,
and then I shoot again. That's
so a lot of it has to do with the ability to read the wind by looking at the flags.
It's all of
too.
It, actually, because if there's no wind at all,
everybody wins.
Everybody will have big. Everybody who has a good load development, a good rifle, and a good technique, they will almost do all be in the 75 and things like that.
Cool.
It's the wind that makes the.
So that's what separates the men from the boys, being able to read those flags.
Yeah, and that's a whole thing to learn, because I was lucky last summer. There was not. So at 300 yard, I was almost always in the top three. 400 was not that bad too. 500, I got down in the class a bit, and 600 was my weak spot.
Right.
So I tried to practice looking only at the wind, not marking anything. And, you know, and you also can look at what other shooters are doing.
Right.
Because when the target goes up, there's a pin about 2 inch big in the bright orange that is
so,
in
so
the hole.
So you can see where your hit is.
Yeah. So if you shoot, all goes well, and suddenly everybody start to swear on the line. You look at the targets, it's all to the left. Then you know the wind is coming from the right, and you have to correct accordingly.
Hmm.
So it's basically a game of wind.
Awesome.
That's the art.
That's great, Bob. I think then we could probably, I mean, this was a nice introduction. Unfortunately, we're running out of time.
No, it's all right.
I think we could have you come back another time and do like a part two. It was a lot of things to try and cover in a short period of time.
Yeah, we should have you back and talk just stocks, and then we should have you back again and talk just F class.
Yeah.
Well, stock, we pretty much talked about it, you know.
Yeah.
F class, well,
whatever.
We'll talk
it is
about the reloading part of it.
Yes, definitely want to get into load development. Yeah.
Yep.
It's gonna be my pleasure. Next time you want, just let me know, and I'll be there.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for joining us this week, Bob, and stay in touch. Can't wait to hear how the season goes, and maybe that's what we'll do when you're when your season starts. We'll get you back on, and you can tell us how things are going.
Well, actually, on May 9th, if you're around Quebec City, you can come to our introduction day in FLAC.
Oh, interesting.
Think about that.
Yeah, I will, because I think in a year or two, when my back and my knees are totally finally shot, then I'm going to give up the IPSC and pick up the precision. So, well, thank you so much again for joining us, Bob. It was a real pleasure, and we look forward to having you on again in the near future.
Well, my pleasure was mine, and always good time to talk to you guys.
Excellent. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
That was an awesome interview, and I'm looking forward to learning a bit more about F-Class, because as I said, I'm old, so someday. I'm not saying all F-Class.
Someday you're just going to have to. I mean, you're just not going to be able to walk up that hill anymore without blowing out a calf muscle.
That only happened one time.
Yep, but at one time was enough.
Yeah, and then my foot let go. It's still not bad. Anyway. Tennis elbow we'll talk about next week.
Right.
Why don't we jump into some listener feedback?
That's a good one.
All right. I'll grab the first one here from Uncle Biscuit. He says, Merry Christmas, all. That's a little early for Christmas, isn't it?
Hey, these are some older emails, just by the way. These are the ones we were supposed to do last week, but we got carried away with talking with Sean. So, yeah, here they are.
There you go. So these were some of the Christmas ones.
Right.
So Merry Christmas to you too, Uncle Biscuit. He says, hope all is well and that everyone found at least what? Really? He says, hope all is well and that everyone found at least one AR under the tree.
That's not what he said.
Says SKS.
Well, it's close. You got a Garand, right? That's basically the same thing.
Oh, when I butt stroke you with it, then I think your opinion will change. See that mark right there? That's a tooth mark from when Matthew called my Garand an SKS.
There you go. That's funny. See this hole in my tooth? That's from hockey. Not from... Yeah, it probably was.
So he carries on and says, where do I find a 20-inch heavy barrel for my AR build? Maybe my Google skills are failing me.
With a Z, by the way, with a Z.
Skills? I said skills?
Yeah, just saying.
Are failing me, but I can't find one. I hear good things about NEA barrels, but I'd like an extra inch or two. That's what she said. But also, right. What's your opinion on Aero Precision M4E1 upper receivers? I think all Aero Precision is crap. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year, Uncle Biscuit. So we got one suggestion here to try Wolverine Supplies. S&J Hardware makes barrels, but I'm not sure of the lengths. And of course, Colt D'Amaco, the SA20, comes with a 20-inch barrel. So find yourself a Colt D'Amaco dealer and see if you can just order up a barrel. And I think you'll be very happy because those are hammer forged barrels. And the quality and the accuracy out of those barrels is second to none.
So why are Aero Precision crap?
I'm just hearing poor quality and inconsistency.
Oh, okay. Interesting. That's a little bit better than just saying they're crap.
Wait, so. Second.
Yeah.
No, I apologize. Oh. I'm confusing that with Blue Line.
Oh, I could confirm that because my Blue Line was out of spec.
Yeah. So Aero Precision? Sorry, I have no idea. Thank you, Matt, for asking.
No problem. I did a little bit of looking into the Aero Precision, the M4E1. I don't know much about them, but from what I read and what I saw online, a lot of the guys really liked them. They were saying that they looked really sexy, which I don't understand why one AR upper would look a bit more sexy than another, seeing as they all look almost identical. However, some of the guys were really liking their lines to the and the result that I was almost embarrassed to read some of their emails. But the popular opinion on the internet, anyway, take that for what it is. A lot of guys do like them. I didn't see any negative things about them, so I did notice they have a really cool or an interesting way of adding their forehand. What do you call that thing? Sticks out the front, covers the barrel.
Handguard?
That's the one, handguard. So, anyway, they look a little bit innovative. They may be a little too innovative for some people. I don't know. If it ain't broke, don't fix it kind of thing, maybe. But take that for what it is. And I guess I just Googled it and I found it. So, that was the ARs you couldn't find. Never mind.
The barrel he can't find. Barrels. Yep, the handguard he found.
But yeah, no, anyway, just like I said, from what I read online, the M4E1s were, a lot of guys were really happy with them. So, take that for what it is.
I must look into that because I want to build a 10.5-inch upper for my polymer lower, and NEA uppers won't fit on that lower, but right. like the STI one does, and yours probably does. So maybe this is something I should look at. I'll go with NEA barrel, of course, but
sure.
Yeah. So, Owen, would you take the next one from Josh?
I can do that. Josh says, "Hi guys, I heard the story at one of our cowboy action matches this summer and thought I should share it with you. One of the shooter's sons is a geologist in Alberta. His coworker was working deep in the woods one day alone when he heard a grunt sound from behind him. He turned to see a large male grizzly standing on its hind feet looking at him. The bear was close, really close. As slow as he dared, his trembling hand reached beside him for a handheld bear banger he always kept for this moment. He raised it and fired. To his horror, he watched the banger portion sail over the head of the bear and explode behind him. The bear took off like a rocket straight for him. Lucky for him, the bear had the same look of terror on his face that he did when it zoomed by close enough to feel the wind on his face. Just another example of how an ATC 44 mag and a McClatchy warning shot would have suited the situation better." All the best. And this is Josh from Windsor, Nova Scotia.
Very nice. So, I've heard that story before too, and it's always cracked me up. It just, you know, the whole idea of, oh, I got a bear banger to scare the bear away, and it blows up behind the bear. Oh, crap. Yeah.
That's why you aim for the bear's groin.
Yeah.
With the banger or the 44 mag. Give him a warning shot in the junk. That'll fix him. All right. You want to take this one from Mark, Matthew?
Sure do. From Mark, he goes, "Hi, guys. Since Slamfire Radio is probably my favorite gun-related podcast, I thought I would pose a question that may be fitting for a show topic."
It's too bad he's only listened to one show.
Yeah.
Lucky for us.
"I've been wanting to make some reactive steel targets for a wide range of calibers from 22 rimfire through 45 ACP and on up to centerfire rifles. Could you address target design in terms of different styles of target, what steel thicknesses might be needed based on caliber and target styles? Merry Christmas, have a happy new year." From Mark in Austin, Manitoba.
Mark, if you email me at trevorfurlott@gmail.com, I have plans on one of my computers for IPSC steel targets and props, so I could send you that. I mean, that might get you pointed in the right direction.
Curtis and I have built a number of metal targets, mostly for rimfire, and when it is rimfire and even handgun, anything less than, well, anything 45 and under, I guess, even 44 Magnum, I guess, would be all right with this stuff. Anything pistol caliber and lower, the strength of the steel really isn't that important, as far as we've discovered so far anyway. We haven't had any of our targets fail. So any steel at all, pretty much, is fine.
Well, you remember those little flippers? They look like jacks?
Yeah.
My 45 bent those all to hell.
That's right. And that was a bit of an experiment. That's right. Yeah, that was some pretty thin steel. I guess if you're going to do that, you're going to want to make sure it's at least quarter inch steel. Or just get the right hardness too, yeah.
AR 500 all the way. It's cheap and readily available.
If you can get AR 500, that's what you should do. But it is actually a little harder to come by than Trevor thinks, apparently. So, but yeah, AR 500. AR 500 is the stuff that you can shoot pretty much anything at. But if all you have is just scrap iron laying around, you know, just build whatever you like, cut it out however you like, weld it however you like. Just make sure you're far enough back so that whenever there's any sort of splatter, it doesn't come back at you. The real key to making sure that your steel target is safe is that it has a smooth surface. If it has a smooth surface with no pockmarks in it, no dents, no divots, no holes, your splatter is going to go 90 degrees to the side. It's not going to come back at you at all. If you do have holes in it, that's when you start getting splatter on you. So that's the key to keeping it safe. Use whatever steel you have laying around. Be innovative. Be creative. Just build whatever you think would be cool and see how it works.
And Matthew's not kidding about that. Don't shoot cratered steel. I took a shot to the forehead that would have taken my eye out.
Yep. It's very important that you don't do that.
Okay. The next one comes to us from Melissa, Toby's adult supervisor.
Toby's an adult? Oh, no. She's the adult.
She's the adult.
She supervised him. Okay.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, she's the adult that provides him with the necessary amount of required supervision at all times.
Gotcha.
And Melissa says, hey, fellas, the Hubs and I are having a little debate over some reloading equipment. Since the three of you also do some reloading, I was hoping you could give your opinion to help us solve this. A few years back, with Trevor's advice, I purchased Toby a Dillon 650. You're welcome, Toby. Those familiar with this setup know that it only comes with parts for one caliber. So you buy it, it comes from the factory set up to reload 9 or set up to reload 40. That's all you get. And then you have to add what we call caliber conversion kits to it. She carries on or continues. She says, over the years, he purchased conversion kits and die sets for other calibers we regularly shoot. Recently, I've run out of target ammo for my 40 EDC. That's everyday carry, Matthew.
I knew that.
I did it for the listeners. He has well over 500 components to reload. However, we cannot decide who is fiscally responsible for purchasing the conversion kit. In his defense, he states, I should be the one to purchase since he does not own a firearm in this caliber, and since it's my firearm, I should buy it. I think since reloading is his hobby and it's his press, he should purchase the necessary equipment. I mean, we're talking about the man that if he has ammo for a firearm, he does not own, will use that excuse to purchase one in that caliber. Yes, it is my gun. I will be shooting the finished product. I have no problem purchasing the components to make ammo, but do you think he should be responsible for the equipment? Help me out, guys. What would you do? Thanks, Melissa. Toby's adult supervision. I absolutely think the responsibility falls on Toby.
Absolutely, because we like you way more than we like him.
Well, it's your press. It's his press. Talking to Toby.
Oh, you're talking to Toby. I wasn't sure. Seeing his email was from Melissa, I thought maybe, you know.
Toby, I'm talking to you now. I said that to clarify for Matthew.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I feel bad.
So, yeah, Toby, it's your gear, man. I mean, I have caliber conversion kits for guns I no longer have in those particular calibers, but maybe a guy in the gun club needs some ammo reloaded. I'm now available to help that guy. Why don't you want to help your fellow man? Why do you hate your wife, and why do you hate fellow shooters?
Why did you just call Melissa a man?
I'm still talking to Toby.
Oh, I'm just saying. No, you say, why do you hate your fellow man?
And it's his wife. Referring to people in the gun club who may have a gun in the caliber in which he could reload for.
It's funnier my way.
It's awful your way.
Guys, if I would disagree with you if I wasn't so scared of her. So,
right.
So that's what it comes down to. Let's hypothetically hear your version of the argument then for her to buy it. Hypothetical, of course.
Right. Yes, totally hypothetical because I would never contradict her in any way. I feel like she should have to purchase everything that involves it because it is for her. I mean,
you want her to reload it too?
Go on. Yes.
No, it's his.
He could do that for her because as you know, he could be gentlemanly. I understand that. That's different. But man,
no, it's his gear. And when she finally wisens up and throws him out, and he takes it with him. He'll be able to reload 40 for his next girlfriend.
Here's the...
No.
What? Hello?
Inside voice, Trevor. Inside voice.
Oh, man. I said the quiet part loud and the loud part quiet.
That's funny. No, see, it's like this. If you go over to a friend's house who has a garage and he works on cars and stuff, and you need a special tool... Or you need, you know, a set of wrenches to go over and change your oil or something. Well, if he buys the wrenches, because it's his garage, man, this doesn't sound right. You should really buy it. Dang it, I'm disagreeing. I don't care.
I know what you're saying. I had a buddy of mine do a job for me that required a tool. I bought him the tool so he could do the job for me because he was going to do the job, but I needed the job done. He didn't have the tool. He said, here, Mark. Here's the tool you need to do this job for me, and as payment for the job, you get to keep the tool.
So what you're saying is Melissa should be buying her own die set.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly. I couldn't even have come up with a better example.
Dang.
Thank you very much.
That's why I stumbled halfway through and backpedaled furiously, hoping nobody would catch on, but Trevor took the bait and carried on with it.
Dang. No, it's still Toby's responsibility because it's his breath.
Because
look,
we like
when I wasn't shooting 9mm, Matthew, and we were reloading 9mm for you on a regular basis on my press, did you buy the conversion kit and the dies?
True. I did not. But that's because you're a really nice guy. And Toby's a really nice guy. Exactly. That means he should buy it.
Right. So there we go. Show over.
Show over. Yeah. quickly before we backpedal again.
All right. But no, that is all we have for this week. So we're going to go move into shout outs and goodbyes. There are a lot of emails left. Next week's show may simply be a catch up on the email show. So let's see. Any iTunes reviews?
I didn't check.
All right. Neither did I. I wanted to, but I don't have iTunes.
We'll do that next week, maybe.
Okay. Lots of shout outs. I got to go fast. Ed, just because you're Ed. You probably did something for me recently. Jeff Reese at the Calgary Show. What just happened?
Nothing. I'm just laughing because you probably did something for me. That's cool. No, so here's a shout-out.
No, my stupid computer just suddenly moved on me. Okay. Yes, Jeff Reese at the Calgary Shooting Center for the amazing Christmas gift. That thing was awesome. Thank you very much. Remember, if you don't shoot at the Calgary Shooting Center, you are, in fact, a communist. Fred, for picking up those dies for me and delivering powder. Well, you haven't delivered it yet, but Brian's got powder for you to deliver for me. Filthy, for the grand, for the deal on the mags, and for everything else you've done for me lately. You rock. Thank you very much. Long live the Empire. Your buddy who gave us the tour of the museum. I'm still not sure if I'm supposed to use your name or not, so I won't, but you know who you are, Mr. D, and thank you so much for taking the time out of your schedule to show us around, and thank you for those cool rounds that you gave me. Luke Drew, thanks for that mason jar filled with clear fluid that warms my belly. Thank you for delivering the ammo to me and other stuff. And this one is a bit more sentimental. For everyone who reached out with encouragement when I tried to quit podcasting and basically wouldn't let me do it, a lot of the comments that I received in email and Facebook basically made me change my mind. I had quit both shows. For those listeners who don't know, I was done. I was over with podcasting. Not because I wasn't. I just had enough. A lot
going
on.
It's because Owen talks too much, isn't it?
That's what it is. Yeah. I had a lot going on and was just going to back away. But podcasting has done a lot for me. I've met a lot of amazing people, and several people took the time to say, no, don't go. We like what you're doing, and please keep doing it. So you know who you are if you contacted me, and I really appreciate it, and it's part of the reason why I stuck around. So thank you very much, and I'm looking forward to bringing you more gibberish and rants and go-button moments in the unforeseeable future.
And just to clarify, none of those people were Matthew and I.
That's actually true. I wasn't going to say it, but yeah. Everybody except for my co-host wanted me to – no, I'm just kidding. No, you guys were more or less supportive of me staying. Okay, what else we got? Is that it? You guys got any shout-outs?
I did, but I forget who it's for because you rambled for a while there.
All right.
Well, I have a shout-out to some random guy named Harry who – I shouldn't call him random guy. I play a couple of games on my phone, and he's one of these people. He's in the UK. He's big into airsoft, has this whole big airsoft because he can't have guns over there. Like what he wants. So, but anyway, he's starting to listen to the show, and yeah, so someday his goal is to come to North America and shoot guns. So
come to the charity shoot.
Come to the charity shoot. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
So anyway, I told him I'd give him a shout out on the show.
There it is.
Cool. All right. Well, be sure to check us out on the Crusader Podcast Network, the first international pro gun podcast network. Every show there is dedicated to protecting our rights as gun owners, no matter what side of the border you live on. Also, get out there and join the NFA and the CSSA, and make sure that you've printed off your NFA petition for magazine capacity restriction and for de-restricting the AR. If you don't know what that is, please visit the NFA website for more information.
Actually got a contest. We didn't know it, and it was announced, and neither of these guys disputed it, so apparently it stands. Take a picture of all the signatures. Whoever has the most sheets wins something from us. We don't know what it is yet, but you're going to win something.
Be sure to check us out on Gun Owners of Canada and like us on Facebook because it just helps get the show noticed.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm Ron Burgundy. Take somebody shooting.
Hug your gun. See you next week. Blah, blah, blah. Also, again, to reiterate, Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network, if you're listening to us there and you want us to stay, let us know. This is your last chance.
Owen?
Yeah, hasta la vista, baby.
Nice.
When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun.